Alrighty, it is 12:20 here on The Shilling Show. Hey, thanks for joining us. I never got a chance to say that. Thank you so much for being a member of this listening audience. We know you have many choices on your radio dial at these hours of the day, and we're grateful that you have chosen to park here at News Radio 1070 WINA. And I want you to make an appointment with this program. You'll hear unique news analysis, commentary, and insight that you'll hear nowhere else on the Central Virginia radio dial. Nobody's going to tell you the truth like we do right here as we see it, and that is a promise. So I hope you'll be with us here each and every day. You don't want to miss a moment. The phone number is 977-1070. The amazing Leon Oliver is standing by to take your calls politely and professionally, also monitoring the email inbox daily during the course of this program at robs@wina.com. So take advantage of all of that. Pleased to welcome back to the program. He's here regularly with us. David Murata is the president of Murata Wealth Management. And today, the topic at hand is aligning money and values. It's a very important thing to do. And David, it's funny because this has been done on the government level before. We remember people divesting of investments in certain countries through either the local government like Charlottesville or nationally or state governments, and yet many people don't talk about it on a personal level. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you, Rob. Thank you so much for having me.
Before we jump into all of this, I know that you have an upcoming event. You wanted to issue an invitation to the listening audience.
We do. This Thursday at the Senior Center, we have a seminar on life planning and charitable giving, and it's much on this topic about now that you're a senior citizen, that doesn't mean your life is over, and aligning all of your finances to try to meet your spiritual goals. Thursday, May 12th at 10 o'clock at the Senior Center.
You know, I love the title or the topic, just because you're a senior citizen doesn't mean your life is over. And I think there used to be this thing where people thought, well, when I get to that age, I have no more value. You know, I've used up my value. I'm not working anymore. I've raised my children. And people need to be aware, not only financially, but I just think, as we're talking about values today, that there is such great value in the wisdom and knowledge of people who are seniors.
Yeah, that's right. I had a great role model in my life. My father is turning 85 this year.
Wow.
The only thing he's ever failed at is retirement. he's about to celebrate his second wedding anniversary, and he's still going strong. He's lecturing on board cruise ships. He's lawn bowling. He's giving talks. He's organizing trips. He's still going strong.
And in fact, he's appeared here at least once, if not twice, on The Shilling Show when he was in town visiting, and we'll be pleased to have him here with us again. It was a terrific time. All righty. So we're talking about aligning money and values. And I don't know if you found this in your own work, but this is what you do for a living. Are people hesitant to think about it, or they initially just don't think about it?
I think most people come to a financial planner or wealth manager like us because they're worried about the money side.
Mm-hmm.
But we always start with the value side. What is the money for? We ask them a lot of probing questions, even on their first meeting with us. We're asking them why they get out of bed in the morning. What are their goals and values? What do they support? What are they trying to accomplish in life? Because I've never met someone for whom money is simply the way of keeping score and it had no other purpose in their life. And if I have, I would say that's a fairly sad existence if you're just living to make the digits on your net worth statement go up. So we try to figure out what their life is for and then organize their values in accordance with that. We start with, obviously, our firm starts with investment management, and around that goes financial planning and then wealth management. But the real goal and target of the whole thing is what we would call life planning or success and significance or meeting your goals. And that's a much longer and harder discussion because you're so busy with life, sometimes you don't have time to stop and be intentional about it.
You know, David, it's an interesting question. What makes you get out of bed in the morning? What are some of the answers that you've heard just generally? I mean, what are people's motivations? Because, again, we don't have this conversation very often and certainly not in a public venue.
Yeah, it's interesting. People try to dismiss that question with the alarm clock or my dog or something like that. Or that's what gets me out of bed in the morning. But then as we really begin to probe into it, some people, it's all about something like travel, new experiences, visiting new places, seeing new cultures. You know, we call that a traveler personality mm-hmm. in terms of finances. And organizing your finances around traveling means, you know, for example, my father has a very, very modest place. I think he can lay in bed and touch most of the walls in his apartment. But he is out and about, and he loves to go on cruise ships. He loves to travel the world. He lectures on board cruise ships on destinations. He's most likely, when you get off on a cruise ship destination, to forget all the canned packages and get mm-hmm. on a bus. I had the privilege of being with him in December, and we were in Costa Rica, and he said, okay, so let's just get on a bus. We're going to go visit this little town inland that is, you know, I've never been to, and so we're going to go see that. And it's just an adventure, and it's the adventure of exploring the world and cultures and life. So that's one personality, and that's sort of a unique personality. For other people, it's all about nesting. Mm-hmm. It's my family. It's my house. I need a big house. I'm going to stay at my house. I'm going to invite people to my house. I'm going to raise my family, and I want to spend all my money on that. That's terribly important. For other families, it's entrepreneurship. They have a business. They're running their business. When they get more money, they start another business, and they're putting all of their money into running businesses, employing people, getting stuff done. You know, they've got their clients that they're satisfying, and so it's all about that. And so for every person, it's a slightly different approach. Probably the most interesting one I heard of. My mom was also a financial planner,
mm-hmm.
and she always told the story about a woman who was working at a dot-com tech organization in San Francisco, making great money, but her dream was to be a California park ranger. And so she wanted to save enough money so she could retire on a park ranger's salary at age 50 was her goal. But then my mom got her started thinking about, well, how do you know they'll hire you? What's the coursework you need to be a park ranger? And got her involved in all these clubs and classes such that she didn't have to wait till she was 50. She was in her 20s. She started being involved in all that immediately, found new friends, found someone she fell in love with, and it just sort of goes from there. So aligning your goals and your money together requires taking those first steps toward your goals. And I think that's the most important thing is sometimes you need a coach who will help you articulate your goals and then take the first steps toward them.
And certainly that is very, very helpful to people to have a coach like that. I would imagine the vast majority of just general citizenry has never had that experience before. We've got about 30 seconds or so. Is that what you find, that people really are lacking that sort of mentorship in their lives?
Yeah, you know, a coach simply borrows your watch and tells you what time it is. So a coach is simply trying to draw out of you what you know you need to do and then asks you every week, did you do it? Did you do it? And so you can coach yourself, but it's much harder because it's like when you're trying to run. You know, I was on a soccer team and it was like, Murata, pick up the rear, you know, you're running too slow, run slower. And you need that coach who kind of yells at you and says, you know, run faster. So I think that's the benefit of having a coach is they hold your feet to the fire.
David Murata is our guest. You can visit him online at emurata.com. We're talking today about aligning money and values, particularly in this graduation season when people are getting into a new season of their lives and figuring out what it is they want to do when the alarm wakes them from bed every morning. All righty, 977-1070 is the phone number. The Shilling Show will return right after the news.
I remember when I was a lad, times were hard.
Hey, coming up soon on The Shilling Show, that would be tomorrow. It's our interview with James Halfaday, Democrat for City Council. Of course, we had a little fun with James as we lambasted him with the recipe for chicken Halfaday. But he's actually coming on the show tomorrow. We're going to have a fresh start. Democrat for City Council, James Halfaday on The Shilling Show tomorrow. Please set your alarm clocks in case you happen to be asleep. You don't want to miss that interview. It should be absolutely fascinating. We're continuing now with David Murata, a president of Murata Wealth Management, talking about aligning money and values. And one of the interesting things that you talked about was judging our well-being. And I would guess that people have different ways of doing this. But how do we actually, or how do people actually judge how well they are?
Yeah, it's interesting. One of the things I think it's good to remember is that most of the ways that people have of judging success are all just invented. So if you take a typical university student, we have grades for university students. And I remember hearing the story once of a university that picked the top 150 students out of a student body of 15,000. And they offered a class for them, mm-hmm. Specifically for the top 150 students. And then at the end, the instructor was told, give 50 A's, 50 B's, and 50 C's. So how do you take the top 150 students and give 50 of them C's simply because the course needs to have a certain bell curve or a certain grading curve? So all of the grades and all of the measurements that we have for success are fairly invented, and they're cultural. It depends on what your parents thought was important. They're sometimes by a city. So, for example, here in Charlottesville, it's very much letters after your name and degrees. Mm-hmm. You know, if you were to go to San Francisco, they don't care if you have a PhD. They care if you've invented the latest .com and you're running your own company. So entrepreneurship is very strong there. And so, you know, if you're in LA, it's just, hey, who have you been on the screen with someone
right.
else? You know, it's all about who you've been in a movie with.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of those are simply invented ways of keeping score, and none of them produce satisfied lives unless it so happens that the way in which society is keeping score and your values just happen to coincidentally align perfectly. And you can be perfectly happy having a very quiet and contented life so long as it's in accordance with your values and what you think are important. And that's what's really important is, and that happens at every age. We tend to discount the young, we tend to discard the elderly, and we tend to think somewhere in between are the people who have real power and influence. And that's all just a product of keeping score as well, too.
You know, David, I remember, and I think this goes back to my high school days or maybe just afterward, I had a friend who bought two of everything. He bought two jet skis. He bought two motorcycles. He bought two everything because he basically wanted to make sure that he could accommodate any friend with his stuff. And on the back of his truck was a bumper sticker that says, "The one with the most, who dies with the most toys wins," or something like that. And I thought, you know, I don't want to die with a lot of toys. That's not important to me. You know, my personal measure of success, and it's something that my wife and I talked about many years ago, was, you know, how can we arrange our lives so that we spend the most time together as a family? And there have been a lot of sacrifices along the way, but one of them was moving out of Southern California, where the cost of living was just tremendous, and coming to a place here where we could actually do that. We could make some compromises in our lifestyle and our earning in order to spend time as a family, and it's been terrific. So in that way, I feel very successful, but I'm sure there's other people who look and go, gosh, you know, you're not pulling down the big bucks in the things that you're doing, so you're an utter failure.
Yeah, it doesn't really help to have hundreds of thousands of dollars of income when you're a slave to a job that keeps you away from your family, your kids hate you, and your wife wants to divorce you.
And I think this goes to the whole values thing, because I have a friend like that who is now a partner in a very successful Southern California law firm, and I've known him since the eighth grade, but he really did become a slave to his job. And I think he probably likes what he's doing on some level, but I think he dislikes that he has to be away from his family so much. And of course, his kids are almost all grown up now, and that's been his life, and that's what he dedicated his life to.
Yeah. There, it's interesting. Ken Rouse is the author of Putting Money in Its Place, and he's got a great exercise in which you start by, he's 15 values that he lists. You start by crossing 10 of them off, and then you have to pick your top five, and then with the top five, you have to rank them 1 to 5. And it's a great exercise because every single person, you know, is going to pick a different combination. And the combination you pick really does help define who you are and what you want out of life. And I just, it's on our website and it's on emirata.com. But I just think it's interesting to think about the person for whom they would pick adventure, aesthetics and culture, and recreation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you kind of get a sense for who that person is. On the other hand, someone else might pick authority and power, financial security and achievement.
Mm-hmm.
And you get a sense that person's going to be driven in a completely different way. And so you have to figure out what your passions are and what your drive is. And then everything about achieving your goals is about passion and grit. It's not about anything else. The passion is what keeps your engine of motivation running. And the grit is what helps you over the things that are work. No matter what you've picked, there's going to be elements that are just work, and you need to sit down and get them done to get it accomplished. And so passion and grit together is really what helps drive us.
I remember the movie called True Grit with John Wayne, and I'm sure you remember it as well. I have a feeling if we went over to Charlottesville High School and asked 100 students that we might be lucky if we found two or three who understood what this word grit means. Is there a modern day equivalent, or is the concept completely lost on many young people today?
It is lost. And one of the reasons it's lost is because kids aren't exposed to vocation and work. It used to be that at 14, you'd have a summer job. And by 14, you didn't have a summer job. That would be considered a failure. today, it's just not worth getting a summer job. You're not employable. You're not worth minimum wage. No one's going to hire you. And so I advocate for every parent out there, make sure that your 14-year-olds work and do something for the summer in order that they might find their vocation and their calling. Because passion is important, but one of the ways you find passion is by having lots of stuff thrown at you, and then you see what really sticks. And you have to have it thrown at you, and you have to have enough grit to sort of try it out and then come back. Grit is that stick-to-itness that means you just won't give up. You're so stubborn that you said you're going to do it, and you're expected to do it, so you're going to sit down and finish and do it. And that is a very rare commodity these days, partly because we don't train it.
And so we have this generation of kids growing up, and maybe there's many of them already adults because they grew up like this, who are constantly feeling deprived. There's no such thing anymore as delayed gratification. We see people, they want the 4,000-square-foot house immediately. They're not willing to start with the 1,000-square-foot two-bedroom starter and move their way up. They want to have the nicest car, and they're willing to lease it or to buy it on time and paying hundreds, if not thousands, of dollars a month in those payments. I mean, we've really lost that. So why is it that we feel so deprived, and does it have anything to do with values?
Well, yeah, and thus begins the enslavement to maintaining all of those things. If your goal in life and your passion in life is to write poetry, I wouldn't expect you to live in anything under very humble situation, because you're going to need to live off a poet's salary, and you're going to need to live off a poet's salary when the poet is still alive. And until you're dead, you're not going to be that famous. So it takes a long time for writing poetry to take its hold. But you're right. The grit and the stick-to-itness is partly what's missing, and partly it's because our educational system does not encourage taking chances. My daughter increasingly in school would know, this is what the professor wants from me, but I would like to try this. It's dangerous. It's innovative. He'll either like it and give it the A I know I could have gotten otherwise. He won't understand it and give it a B, or he'll disagree with it and give it a C. And there's very little incentive to take those kinds of risks. So if you're living for the invented rewards of grades, you're going to end up producing things which are very bland, because you know that will satisfy the teacher and you'll get the right grade. If you have a different value, you're trying to actually learn the material, try out new ideas, try this new thing that your teacher didn't even tell you about, but it's something innovative, that's going to be much more risky. And you can't do that and also live for grades. It just doesn't work. And so my advice to young people would be to figure out what you're passionate about, follow those passions, don't worry about the invented scorekeeping, and don't worry about the money, because the money will take care of itself.
It certainly will. 977-1070 is the phone number here on News Radio 1070 WINA. You're with The Shilling Show and David Marotta. We've got one more segment coming up. If you have comments or questions about aligning money and values, maybe you've got a young graduate in the family, somebody coming up, and you'd like to ask a question or make a comment, we'd love to hear from you. 977-1070. The Shilling Show returns in a moment. Alrighty, 977-1070, the phone number here on The Shilling Show. David Marotta is our guest, aligning money and values. This was so interesting to me. One of the things that you had in your piece, and you can check it out online at emarotta.com, was the concept of regretting what we didn't do versus regretting what we did do in life. And I think that's, you were right on about this. What is it that people would regret more between the two?
People regret more what they didn't do. The only time they ever regret what they did is when they've ruined their life by marrying the wrong person or getting involved in drug addiction or doing something illegal. But most of the time, people really regret what they didn't do, the chances they didn't take, the friendships they didn't pursue, the jobs they didn't try out. And so I always say it's good to ask the question, what's the worst that could happen? If it might destroy your life, then hesitancy is indeed a virtue.
Mm-hmm.
But if the worst that could happen is you would be embarrassed or you would be discouraged or something like that, take the chance. My father always said, showing up is half the battle.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember once he was, he came back from on a cruise trip, and he came back to the table, and he had a medal around his neck. He'd won second place in the ping pong tournament. And it took about half the dinner to find out there were only two people who had entered. but that's true. I mean, you should go ahead and try stuff out. And I always say that the elderly should continue to be passionate about what they're passionate about, and they should just worry about being a contribution to whatever it is that they're passionate about. They shouldn't worry about all the achievement of, I don't have as much time as I used to have. I don't have as much energy as I used to have. Just be a contribution, because what the elderly have that no one else has is wisdom. And that wisdom is incredibly valuable and incredibly encouraging and incredibly affirming into people's lives. And that's what the real strength is. I think it's a proverb from the Bible. With the youth there is strength, and with the gray hair there's wisdom. Mm. And that's what we need, which is the same thing is true for young people. In the youth, you're in the process of moving to maturity. So you're moving from asking other people's permission to just doing it and asking their blessing. And that's a process. It's very difficult for some kids to overcome the fact that they're no longer children of their parents. Mm-hmm. They've now been raised to the level of equal, and their parents expect them to be able to stand on their own two feet. So when it's especially true, fathers, and sons need that affirmation that, yes, you're on your own. You're making decisions. If you want my wisdom, and fathers often give wisdom a little too freely, rather than letting the child make his own decision and then just blessing the decision that they've made. And so I've found it's important to back off and let my kids make their own decisions, and then say, hey, that's great job. Good job. You're making decisions. Because the decisions aren't always right and wrong. Sometimes they're best and better and good, and they're all mixed together. Mm-hmm. And you have to let them follow their own. And sometimes they have to follow one and say, huh, that didn't quite work out right. And then when they say, ask you a question, how could I have done it differently? Then they're open to a different approach. But for kids, I think it's receiving that mantle of responsibility and really letting it fall on your shoulders and make your own decisions.
You know, David Morata, we live in a time where it's almost like this philosophy is swimming upstream. I think of very recently when we had our own local delegate and other people on the national level who said, hey, you could put your kids on your insurance policy until they're 26 years old. You know, and they were proud of this. And it's just increasing dependency and delaying maturation. And so while we say we want to do this, it seems like we're fighting against government and perhaps other entities, education and others, that continue to tell kids, hey, be dependent on your parents, you know, move back home. All of these things, they're becoming everyday occurrences.
I do find it very interesting when things that our parents or grandparents used to take for granted suddenly become these new and strange and bizarre ideas. I read one woman's website. I think it's called Free Range Children.
Uh-huh.
It's letting your children actually leave the house and explore the environment around them unaccompanied by an adult. and I think to myself, gosh, I would get on my bike at 8 years old, and I would bike miles away from my house, and I would I'd go get a Slurpee or a hamburger, or I'd go down to the school or something like that, and my parents wouldn't even know where I was until I came home for dinner. You know, sometimes I'd be gone for lunch on a Saturday, and they'd mm-hmm. have no idea where I was. Free range children. Now it's this new avant-garde idea. You know, the same thing's true about working at 14. That was a common occurrence, and now it's this bizarre idea. And people look at you strange, like you're running sweatshops for your children or something when you encourage them to do that.
But it is a different world that we live in. And gosh, I could remember back to when I was a kid, maybe 9 or 10 years old, and my mom would give me $100 bill and send me to the grocery store to buy an item that was maybe a dollar or two. You know, and it was about a mile away, and I'd ride my bike there and. Yeah, the store would be looking at me like, what are you doing with a $100 bill? But it's just what she happened to have, and just gave me the money and let me come home. And she'd probably just never thought anything of that. But I mean, today, you know, we do live in a dangerous world. And so how do we balance that? You know, the fear on the one hand of something bad happening and the freedom and, you know, letting somebody develop their own values on the other hand.
Every parent has got to figure out how to give their children freedom and integrity and responsibility without endangering them in any way. And so I think that's a parent's responsibility is harder today, because you before you'd kick the kid out of the house and you say, go find a job. and he'd go find a job and he'd lose a finger because of it, because of the job. So you have to help your kids find the jobs that will give them the best experiences, and you have to throw those kinds of experiences at them. So I will say I do think that parents today are more protective, but kids today have more fingers.
Which is a good thing. It is 12:54 here at News Radio 1070 WINA, just a minute or so left with David Morata. So I'd like to wrap this up by some advice that you could give not only to college students regarding the future, but also to the parents of graduating students, because they're still central, perhaps, in their children's lives.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for parents is to encourage your children to take on real responsibility, to treat them like adults. You've raised them well, you've done well, it's time for them to learn partly by their mistakes. And for the graduates, you know, I would say you're young, and only when you're young can you truly sort of follow your dreams. So figure out what your passions are by trying a lot of stuff. Don't get locked into one job. And if you get locked into, you know, if you're a junior something and now you get a chance to get promoted to a senior something, consider going to be a junior something else and learning a new skill set, because the top jobs require lots of skill sets. And if you just move up vertically and you don't have that broad experience, you may not rise as far as you want to. And then take ownership. Be willing to go out on your own, to try responsibilities, to take every job as though you ran the company and think of it that way, and really pour your heart into it, and do something that's worth pouring your heart into. And don't waste a lot of time doing something that you're not really excited about. You need something that'll really challenge your mind and heart and body.
I'm hoping that they invite you over to the university one year to give the graduation speech. Because this is the message that kids ought to be hearing today.
Actually, it's great. They've invited me over to do a leadership training program this summer, and I'm really excited about it.
Terrific. Well, congratulations on that.
Thank you.
It's tremendous advice. David Morata, we appreciate our visits. And visit him online at emorata.com. Thanks so much.
Thank you.